regular Drews.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome to episode 44.
Yeah, today we're covering The Red Slippers,
which is Nancy Drew Diaries number 11.
Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
We sure hope so, and we hope you are too.
Join us as we talk Nancy Drew cover to cover and click to click.
Welcome to Regular Nancy Drew.
This was published in 2015, so not long ago, feels like. Yeah. I guess it's 7 years, but could have been yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Don't come for me. What did you think of this one, Corey?
I loved it.
Me
I thought it was great.
Too. It was excellent, and I definitely think it's my favorite one of the Nancy Drew Diaries that we have read so far.
Really?
Yes. I liked it more than I liked Arctic Star.
I think you were right about it having, like, it feeling very similar to the Nutcracker Ballet Mystery that we did last year. Like, not in a bad way at all. Like,
it's no.
just, yeah, it's very different. Yeah. The plot itself ended up being very different, but it's just the same. I don't know. Just very good. Yeah. Very good.
It was very good. I have to say, it was also, this is going to sound stupid when I say it, but it was definitely the most modern Nancy Drew book we've ever read. But of course it was, because it actually is. Like, I don't think we've read a book published later than 2015. So
no, definitely not.
So it literally was, but it felt that way too. Yeah. You know, they mentioned Twitter in this book. And okay, I about had an aneurysm because there is an app that gets put on Maggie's phone called TikTok.
Oh, I know. I was like, how did they?
Like, But, and I looked it up, and TikTok was actually released in 2016. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, so not the same TikTok, but still
very.
No, it's
supposed to be like a clock app, not not TikTok, but it's
not
just...
TikTok. But I was like, oh my God.
It's
an
hilarious
app on a phone
today...
called TikTok. What year is it? You know? Yeah.
Like you were and saying also... with the, oh, sorry.
No, you go for it.
Oh, like you were saying with the last episode, I feel like this one is very self-aware as well. We had a lot of really great moments, really, especially when it came to George. I feel like this was really George's, like, time to shine with the book.
Interesting.
It's been the best, in my opinion, the best representation of George that we've seen so far. And I think a ballet setting is the right way to do that, because we have this traditionally very girly girl activity, almost, that George is, she just has a lot of really good moments in talking about gender roles and how they have affected her. And we see her have like this emotional reaction to other people being kind of forced to get into a box of either you're the girly girl activity or you're not. And there's no, you know, it's just, excellent, excellent, excellent. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure, later.
Of course I read that and I noticed that. I didn't really consider it in a frame of George, which is, so it's very interesting that you say that. But I was going to bring up how great this book is for Ned.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll have to talk about that in depth, because I just have to say, I never thought I would be attracted to Ned Nickerson.
Today's the day, apparently.
This book had me fanning myself for Mr. Nickerson. I mean,
he was great in this one.
Excellent. So I'm very excited to talk about that. Yeah, I just feel like all around, it was just great for all of our characters. Bess, too.
I know.
Bess really pulled at my heartstrings in this one as well. So just excellent. Excellent, excellent. The plot was good, too. Like, it was like, not super straightforward, which is, like, a masterpiece when you consider, like, they have to write this children's mystery in, like, less than 200 pages, you know?
Yeah. Just way less formulaic than what we're used to, I would
say. Right. So, quite an accomplishment. Props.
Yes.
Props, Simon and Schuster.
I think my only critique is the title, The Red Slippers.
Yes! I don't remember
any mention of the shoes being red or the color of the shoes being significant at all. It's just,
and it's,
they're red, I guess.
It's such a fail. That's such a failure, too, because it literally, it would take one sentence. Yeah. It would take one sentence to be like, the famous shoes that Maggie has from this dancer or whatever are red. Like,
yeah.
just call them, these red slippers are my, you know, just make one sentence, one phrase, one dialogue line of Maggie saying something about these red slippers and we'd get it.
Right.
But we just couldn't get it.
And they're doing Sleeping Beauty, which is not a show that like
has red slippers,
necessarily calls for red slippers, right, or is like famous for that, where like,
mm-hmm,
I mean, there's plenty of roles in other ballets where it's like, oh, the shoes call for a different color, so you have to paint them, mm-hmm, or whatever. It would have been easy to work that in, but. No, you're right. It's just meh. But whatever. That's such a small thing to critique. Maybe
it's got to be.
Maybe that was intentional with Scarlet Slippers. It's got
to be because, right, that's what it. That's the only thing I can think of, is that it has to be a callback to the mystery story, the Scarlet Slipper mystery. But I don't know why, because I don't remember that one. So we'll have to come back and read that one and see.
Yes.
But yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Well, three words.
Well, I mean, ballet, obviously. Yeah.
Not obviously red, ballet. Though.
I'd say, like, friends, too.
Yeah.
Like friends, friendship.
Mm-hmm.
The good ship, friendship.
Yes.
Maybe we don't need three words.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just those two.
Ballet, sabotage, I guess.
Friendship.
Injuries.
I would say, no, you know what I would say is, I would say, like, what's the good word to describe it? Like credibility or like skill or like accomplishment.
Okay.
Like so
okay.
much of this book was about like
prestige.
Yes. But, or like having like an identity of like, you're really good at this one thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With the ballet, but also with Nancy, but that's Bess's whole struggle in this.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, like, I don't have anything that makes me, you know? But I don't know what a word is to describe that, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that works.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You come up with it, regular Drews, and you tell us what that word is.
Friendship, you'll know what
ballet,
saying.
and then that.
Vague identity. Oh, gosh. No.
Yeah. What is the word?
Hmm.
This is going to bug me. Maybe we'll come back to it and we'll remember.
Sure. Hopefully.
We'll think of something.
Well, that's all
okay.
right.
Okay. We ready to dive in?
Yes, we are ready.
Okay, so we start off and Bess, George, and Nancy are out running errands. And they decide to make a stop at Coffee Corner, which, by the way, we learn is where George works.
This is probably the first... Well, no, I'm sure there's been other methods of them having jobs, but... Or George right. having jobs, but...
Yeah.
Nice.
I just was like, nice. Cool. George works at the Coffee Corner. Love to hear it. She's a barista. Appreciate
nice little detail inserted in there.
Uh-huh. They're kind of talking. Bess has been acting weird, and Nancy's like, why, you know, what's going on? And Bess just explains that she's upset because she feels like Nancy, George, and even Ned all have these, like, discernible skills and hobbies, and she doesn't. She doesn't feel like she has something that makes her special or, like, some skill, right?
Yes.
And no, it's really sad. But Nancy and George, like, try to reassure her, you know, like, no, like, you know, you're special to us. You have so much about you that makes you special. They were saying all the right things and everything, but, you know. But then an old friend of Bess and Nancy's, Maggie Richards, walks into the cafe. Maggie happens to be a supremely talented ballerina, and she used to dance at the same school that Nancy and Bess did when they were little. And Maggie is so talented that she was actually scouted for a prestigious ballet academy, which she now attends. She's now in town, again, performing in a touring production of Sleeping Beauty that her dance school is putting on to give its students, like, an idea of what it would be like to tour as a working dancer. Mm-hmm. She also says that this performance in River Heights could be a big break for her because it's rumored that this famous ballet critic named Oscar Levine will be in attendance. And if she gets a good review from him, it could really help her if and when she auditions for a professional ballet company. And then Maggie kind of announces, like, oh, after catching up, it's been really great to see y'all, but I really have to go because I don't want to be late for rehearsal. My teacher is really strict. And if I'm even a minute later than 3 p.m., it's like bad news bears. Mm-hmm. And then George looks at her watch, which is, of course, like satellite watch synced to, some, I don't know, it's like very accurate. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, it's 3:10 right now. And Maggie shrieks and exclaims that her phone says that it's 2:10. So interesting. So her phone clock is wrong. So Nancy offers to race them all over to the theater as quickly as she can, because if Maggie's over 20 minutes late, then she won't be allowed to dance in the next show, which would basically ruin her career. Right. So on the way, George is like investigating Maggie's phone, because George is our tech savvy gal. And she discovers an app that's been installed on Maggie's phone called TikTok. TikTok. We were just talking about this. That allows you to manually change the time on your phone. And Maggie says she didn't install this app, but she knows who did. It had to have been her understudy, Fiona Scott. Because apparently things have been happening throughout this run of Sleeping Beauty, including like her wig going missing right before the start of the show, causing Fiona to get to go on because apparently her wig was too small for Maggie. I don't know. And then Maggie
are you
getting
wearing that makes you not able to dance. Whatever.
I know.
I feel like you can just go on with your real hair.
I don't understand how a wig can really be too small.
Right.
It also seems like you could just, it might not be ideal, but you could probably work with a too small wig. You know what I mean? But I don't know.
Did they each have their own wig? Did they have like one costume for this role? I can't imagine that they would have like two different sets of costumes, which is weird.
Well, if they're different sizes and they have be altered to fit them, but
yeah.
I guess we don't really know what the costume situation is. But the wig being too small is just weird. Like,
yeah, it is weird. It is weird.
It's like, how big is your head?
I mean, obviously,
that you can't fit into this wig for just an hour. You know what I mean? Like,
right?
Yeah.
I don't know a lot. I mean, I don't know everything about this, but I don't know that you wear a lot of wigs. Whatever.
You would think, yeah, because it wouldn't be super easy to dance in something that could just fall off your head when you're spinning, you know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And especially for smaller companies, it's like they have one costume. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't fit, you're just wearing a costume that doesn't fit. Like, that's it. You can try to alter it or, like, you know, do things to, like, make it work. But, like, they're not going to order a second costume just for an understudy. You know, like, that's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's odd. And also, it just seems like if the wig doesn't fit, like, it doesn't fit to your head, you could just pin it. Like, you could just pin it in place, which you would do anyway. Right. So it's like, I don't know. Whatever. That's the thing. She lost her wig. She couldn't go on. So Fiona had to go on for her. And then there was also an incident where Maggie kept getting, like, a wake-up call every 2 hours the night before a performance, causing her to pass out from exhaustion backstage. That's extreme. Fiona got to go on. That is very extreme. Yeah. I'm like, I mean, I understand being really tired, but being so tired that you pass out from exhaustion. I mean, I know dancing is physically exhausting, and so I'm sure that has something to do with it. But I just can't imagine a level of tiredness where you don't go on stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, it also seems like 2 hours wouldn't cut it. It seems like you would have to do a wake-up call every 30 minutes.
Right.
To really prevent someone from getting any sleep. But you could get a REM cycle in 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know? Whatever. Anyway, so it seems like Fiona has been causing this so that she gets to go on and perform. And Maggie doesn't. But there's no concrete proof that Fiona is actually the one who did these things. And also, Fiona's parents are major benefactors to this dance school. So it's like, even if she did say something, nothing would come of it.
Right.
So they manage to make it to the theater just in the nick of time, but her teacher is so incredibly angry, and we have to talk about her dance teacher later, too, in a major way. He grabs Maggie by the back of the neck and, like, leads her, like, pulls her up to the stage, telling her that, like, she better prove to him in this rehearsal that she's better than Fiona, otherwise he's going to let Fiona dance tomorrow. So Nancy, Bess, and George, they stay and they watch the rehearsal. And while they're in the audience, they meet Sebastian, who is the piano. And then we had such a hard time with this word in the, the Nutcracker Ballet mystery. Accompanist? Is that
right?
Piano accompanist. Something. He plays the piano.
He's the piano the show.
He says that the director, Jameson, the one who grabbed Maggie by the neck, also has a lot riding on this performance because he really wants to be a choreographer. And if the critic likes this show, it could open doors for him to kind of get on that career path. He also tells us that Maggie really is the only one who can actually dance this role. Fiona is just not as good. So it's kind of like an empty threat from Jameson because Fiona is never going to be as good as Maggie.
Did he choreograph Sleeping Beauty? No.
I don't know, man.
No.
Yeah.
Why would his choreography skills come into play on a ballet that's like very, very, very widespread, very popular, and not something that he choreographed?
That's not something I know a whole lot about. I don't know a whole lot of about the world of like ballet choreography. I don't know if there's other parts that's possible for him to change or something. I don't know.
Maybe, but
maybe it's just like a take on Sleeping Beauty. I don't know.
Well, okay. Sorry. Anyway,
but, yeah.
Interjecting.
Who knows? No, I appreciate it. Your dance experience definitely comes into play here in a major way. So appreciate your expertise.
It does. I mean, every company is different, obviously. Right. So I can't assume too much, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So as the girls are walking out of the rehearsal, they run into Miss Taylor, who is their old ballet instructor. And I gotta say, immediately off the bat for me, I was like, it's Miss Taylor. After meeting her, I was like, this bitch did it.
Yeah.
Nothing has even happened really yet, but this bitch did it. But anyway, she didn't. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But they run into her, and she seems a little awkward when they start talking to her about the show, but it's not really clear why. But she does ask the girls to hang up posters for the show around town for her, and they agree because apparently she's promoting it. I don't know. Whatever. As they are exiting the building with their posters, they're going to go hang some up outside. They overhear a man shouting at his son named Colin about dancing. And it's clear that he's very upset that his son is dancing ballet and he doesn't want him to attend the rehearsal because he thinks it's like this girly activity and he doesn't want his son to like wear tights and act like a girl.
This is what really gets to George. Yes. This is a big issue for her the rest of the book. Yeah.
And right.
Rightfully so.
Props to Colin, who really sticks to his guns and is like, no, I'm going to be a professional dancer. I'm going inside to attend, you know, rehearsal. But obviously George is very upset at this, and that kind of comes into play later as well. The girls unroll a poster to hang on a pole outside, but then they see that the picture on the poster, which is of Maggie in an arabesque being supported by Colin, who plays the prince, Maggie's face has been violently scratched out. Interesting. So it looks like they're all scratched out. And so someone must have altered the original photo sent to the printer. It's not like a physical scratch on the poster. It's like the photo that was printed on the poster was scratched out.
Right.
So the girls decide to investigate because whoever this person is could be violent, because clearly this scratching thing is kind of a, you know, red flag, right?
Right.
So Maggie did kind of specifically ask them to not investigate Fiona because she was like, there's just a couple performances left. I don't want to cause drama. Like, we'll just finish it out and, you know, it's no big deal, right? But Nancy says she can keep her word to not if she doesn't specifically investigate Fiona, just the poster. Okay, Nancy. All right.
Loophole.
She'll think of anything to be able to work a mystery. So once they determine who's responsible for the poster, then they'll go to Maggie and let her know with, like, if they have more concrete proof at that point, right? So Bess decides to stay at the theater to keep an eye on Maggie, and Nancy and George go to the printers who printed the posters. Sharp Image, which is like a regional chain that requires apparently their employees to wear bright pink vests and hats. I was so sure that this was going to come in, this was going to be significant later.
Right.
It's absolutely not, but they really hit home that they have to wear like this embarrassing bright pink outfit. And I don't know what that has to do with anything, but
maybe just because the guy working there had like an argument pink with George. Maybe it's just to like highlight that he's not the happiest employee. I don't know. Like, I hate working here. I have to deal with these girls I don't like. I have to wear this neon pink. Like,
yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
So they don't know who's working there yet. So Nancy is hoping that, like, whoever's working, I can just, like, charm them, use my usual charm and skill to get some information about, you know, this picture or whatever. But, yes, unfortunately, it's this boy named Derek Chase who Nancy had busted for stealing the final exam in one of his classes at River Heights University.
Oh.
So he doesn't like them. I really wonder, did this happen in a previous book?
Maybe. I wouldn't do that as well, but
that would be fun to read if he's going to be like a recurring character. Right. Derek Chase is grumpy with them. So he is, of course, obviously unhelpful to them in their investigation, and is just like, no, I'm not going to tell you anything. I know who you are, Nancy Drew. Like, I'm not going to help you.
Right.
But when they're in there, they do happen to see a picture of the Sharp Image CEO hanging on the wall, Michael Carter, and they realize, wait a second, that's the man we saw shouting at Colin outside the theater. That's Colin's dad.
Hmm.
Interesting connection, right?
Yeah. Well, so, of course, this makes Nancy wonder, could Michael actually be a suspect in this case? He clearly does not want this show to go on, and of course he would have had access to the photo to scratch it out. And so Nancy and George decide that they are going to try to track him down. They figure that since the show is a traveling show, he's probably staying in a local hotel. And there's like 7 hotels in town that they figure would probably be where he's staying. So instead of just calling and asking if he's staying there, because of course staff are probably not going to tell Nancy right. anything, she decides to call all these hotels pretending to be Michael's wife and just have this frantic story like, oh, my husband is staying in a hotel somewhere and I don't remember which one, but our cat is stuck in the chimney. And so this is like an emergency. Like, I need to talk to him right away because the cat will only respond to his voice. So if you could put him on the phone with the cat, it would help the cat come out of the chimney and then the cat will be safe. And this works.
I love this.
This is hilarious.
So much. Not only is it hilarious, it's like also, I think, one of like the only examples of like Nancy actually doing like real detective work.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, she's not just like going to a location and then overhearing a conversation, right? Because she happens to be there. She's right. actually like doing the work
yeah.
and like figuring out information for being sneaky. I love it so much.
Good. It's very clever as well. It was a good mm-hmm. good little ploy. But
definitely.
So they head over to this grand hotel. Nancy goes in and finds him just sitting in the lobby. She pretends to be in, oh gosh,
Future Business Leaders of America.
Okay, yeah. She pretends to be in the Future Business Leaders of America. And she tells him, hey, I'm doing a project on businesses and Sharp Image. So, you know, it'd be wonderful if you would give me an interview about your company. And she tells us that she's recently read this book on how to read facial expressions.
This is ridiculous.
I know. So she's talking to him, trying to get like a baseline understanding of what his facial expressions might indicate. So then she's already worked this out in advance with George. Like, 5 minutes after she starts this interview, George comes in and starts loudly asking the staff if she can hang up one of the ballet posters in the lobby. They tell her, no, sorry, no advertising here. But Nancy doesn't really care about that. She just wanted to see Michael's reaction whenever he sees the poster. He seemed angry and embarrassed, but not surprised to see this poster. And she thinks that maybe he would be surprised if he was the one responsible for sabotaging the poster. Like, why are they still hanging these up? But
right.
Since he really didn't make any, you know, make any facial expressions otherwise, I guess that he doesn't think anything of it. So back in the parking lot, she's explaining all this to George, and she says, I'm not 100% sure, of course, but I don't think it's him. But then they get a frantic call from Bess that something terrible has happened at the theater. So we head back to the theater right away, and we find out that Maggie's dressing room and all the contents in it have been destroyed. Bess says that she had her eyes on Fiona the entire time, so it couldn't have been Fiona, like, sneaking off to the dressing room to do it. Possible that she recruited somebody else to do this for her, but who knows? Maggie at this point does change her mind, and she's like, you know what, Nancy, please, will you investigate this for me? Check out Fiona, do what you have to do. So then at this point, Nancy, Bess, George, Maggie, and Sebastian, our piano man, decide that we're all going to go out to dinner. Bess starts to have this, like, inkling feeling that maybe there's something going on between Maggie and Sebastian, and even, like, indirectly ask them. She's like, how long have you guys been together? And they're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
We're not together. We're just really good friends. We've just known each other for a really long time. So yeah, kind of weird.
They actually say, too, that they're actually – dancers at their school aren't allowed to date. Because Jameson thinks it's a distraction. So, like, they wouldn't even if they wanted to, which kind of makes me think, well, you do want to. But it's just interesting.
That's a weird rule. I feel like that's a weird rule, and it's, like, kind of extreme. But,
okay. Well, the whole thing I want to talk about with – Jameson is that he is, like, abusive and exploitative.
Yeah, controlling. Oh my gosh. I want to, like, run these girls' lives and guys. Mm-hmm. But Sebastian's also not one of the dancers, so why would it be against the rule for a non-dancer and a dancer to date each other?
Aren't allowed to date at all.
Oh, I thought, right? I read it as, like, can't date each other. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's even worse. Sorry.
Yes. It's definitely worse.
Gosh. Well, but we go to dinner and we learn that Fiona's friends that are basically acting as, like, her little mean girl cronies that follow her around. It's really weird. But their names are Evelyn Young and Nicole Rush. We also, Nancy starts talking to Sebastian about why he plays piano for this group and how he got started. And he says, basically, he's been doing this for his whole life. His older sister, Veronica, who actually used to be with this company and is the only person from the company to go on to the American Ballet Company, this big one in New York, she would practice ballet all the time. So he just started playing piano for her. But then once she started getting more serious about it, he actually started playing the piano for the whole company as well. We learned that Veronica, the sister, is basically Maggie's idol, and they were really close friends, like, when they were dancing together, and it's just, like, basically Maggie's dream is to be, you know, the same, or to go down the same path Veronica has with, like, being so successful and making it into this big company. But we also learned that Veronica hasn't been returning any of Maggie's texts or emails recently, which is uncharacteristic, and it seems kind of like a sore spot for Sebastian and Maggie, and it's just kind of weird. So they change the subject. This is when we learn that they are, in fact, are not together. They say that they are more like siblings than anything. But then they get the check, and Nancy goes to pay, and she finds that there is a note underneath the bill or whatever. It says, for your own sake, don't dance tomorrow. All right. Okay. Well, but we have this really weird scene where Nancy goes and, like, confronts the waiter about, like, who left this note, and, like, was it you? Who else was in here? And he's like, you know what, lady, whoever was it, like, it must have been your friends. And she's like, that's weird. I didn't notice any of these other dancers when we came in. I guess they all have, like, matching warm-up gear or whatever that they're wearing, and they see someone in the same sweatshirt or whatever that are actually, like, the people that they see are, like, leaving when Nancy notices that they're even in the restaurant. So she decides to go chase them down in the parking lot to get a glimpse of who it was that might have slipped the note under the bill. And she's able to, like, gosh, this is a ridiculous scene.
Yeah. Just like race through the snow.
Yeah. Like climb through snowbanks in the parking lot. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it's just ridiculous. But she does eventually catch up with the car that's leaving, and she finds that it's Michael driving the car. And there is a girl in the passenger seat with him, but to her knowledge, Colin doesn't have a sister. So who could this girl be that's like wearing this dancer sweatshirt in the car with Michael? Very strange. Very strange.
This ooked me out, I have to say. Yeah. I was like, gross.
Right? Right? Yeah. Why are you driving girls around that you're not related to? All right. Well, they head back to Maggie's hotel so that Nancy can warm up a little bit after her chase through the snow. Sebastian makes some disparaging remarks about Nancy's ability to solve the case. It's like, you're not a part of this world. You'll never get it. Like, you'll never be able to solve this. And like,
ability. That's the word. Ability.
There we go.
Ability.
That works.
Friendship, ballet, and ability. There we go.
Yeah. So Nancy evidently just does not have the insider knowledge that she needs in order to solve this case successfully. Nancy's a little offended by this, and she's like, well, you know, maybe I do know a thing or two about mysteries, and just because it's in a setting that I'm not familiar with doesn't mean much, whatever. And he starts to tell Maggie that, you know, this note kind of feels serious, like maybe you should just let Fiona dance tomorrow just to avoid possibly getting injured or something dangerous, like maybe you should just bow out. Maggie's like, no, absolutely not. I will be going to dance tomorrow, and I will be rehearsing today as well. So, yeah. So Nancy is like, Maggie, you know what? Don't worry. Best George and I will be there for the whole thing, whatever you need.
Yikes. Yeah. Yikes, yikes, yikes.
Yeah.
So the next day at rehearsal, unfortunately, it is a closed rehearsal. So the only way that Nancy, Bess, and George can attend is by, like, posing as a part of Miss Taylor's ballet class, who have previous permission to attend to, like, warm up with the dancers.
Yeah.
So Nancy does her best, and she, like, disguises herself as a dancer and, like, stays in the back, right? Because obviously it's been God knows how long since she has danced ballet.
Right.
Bess and George managed to, like, pose as, like, backstage people. And I really don't understand why Nancy couldn't also do that as well, but whatever.
We needed Nancy in a leotard. That's why.
So Nancy is, like, warming up with the dancers and everything, and she overhears Evelyn and Nicole, remember Fiona's cronies, talking about wanting to take Maggie down a notch, like she was taken down a notch yesterday. Okay. So after warming up, Nancy decides, I'm going to go talk to Fiona, try to butter her up, and, like, hope that some flattery will help her open up about anything that she has, you know, done. But Nancy calls Fiona a better dancer than Maggie to, like, Fiona. She's like, oh, you're so much better than Maggie is. You know, I have no idea why, you know, you're not allowed to dance instead of her or whatever. Fiona flat out goes, like, you're insane. Maggie is a phenomenal dancer. She's so much better than I am. I could never do what she does. And Fiona just doesn't know why she didn't get another role instead of being an understudy. Like, she just wanted to be able to dance in the show.
Yeah.
Because she knows that she's good. She's just not as good as Maggie. So she's not jealous of Maggie's role. She's just jealous that everybody has a role and she doesn't. So interesting. Interesting to hear that motivation from Fiona. And then Fiona turns, like, abruptly to, like, leave. And as she does, a piece of paper falls out of her purse. Nancy picks it up, and it's a receipt for the restaurant that they were at last night from exactly the time they had been there. So, seems like Fiona was the girl with, you know, Michael Carter there last night, but, like, why the heck would she be with Mike Carter?
That's a little fishy.
Also, this just occurred to me. She has the receipt, so it seems like she paid.
I was thinking that as well just now.
What the hell? The only reason to date an older man sorry. Is to have him be like rich and pay for your shit.
This CEO and an 18-year-old girl go out for lunch, and the 18-year-old girl pays for lunch. Awesome.
Wow. Fantastic. Whatever. No, I'm just joking, but it's still odd. Anyway, yeah. Anyway. So later during rehearsal, Maggie is clearly stressed and she is not dancing well because of all of the stuff going on behind the scenes. So she gets snapped at by Jameson, who tells her that dancers have to be able to ignore everything in their personal life, including threats and harassment, to be able to dance well. What a specific thing to say, Jameson.
Yeah.
How do you know that Maggie has been suffering threats and harassment? Could Jameson be responsible for this as, like, a way to, like, test and, like, prepare Maggie for, like, the pressure of, like, professional dancing? Weird. Bess also brings a photo of Colin from the water fountain that she had snapped while he was getting a drink. She shows Nancy that he has a bunch of bandages on his arm that weren't there yesterday, from, you know, smashing a dressing room mirror, perhaps? And so Nancy just kind of comments that, like, with all of this stuff happening and, like, showing up today, it seems as like they have all these suspects adding up. They've got Fiona, Nicole, Evelyn, Colin, Jameson. So Nancy decides what she's going to do to narrow it down is she is going to set a trap.
Love it.
It's so good, Corey.
Yes, she's going to set a trap. That's exactly what we need.
It's really iconic. Iconic Nancy Drew behavior. It is. You know what I mean? It's also not particularly, I don't want to say characteristic. It's like not, I don't feel like we see this a lot. Nancy doesn't set traps a whole lot. She doesn't ever have to. But to see her, like, just, like, enact, like, strategy when solving a mystery is so satisfying. It's like, that's right, Nancy's a real detective. She knows what she's doing.
Ugh. She's always got her big plan at the end that she won't tell us about, but a trap, that is a whole different story.
Right.
So much better.
So apparently, this is the plan. Maggie has these famous ballet dancer's shoes that she brings out before every performance. Which, by the way, I was going to ask you, I didn't write down the name of that famous ballet person, but is that a real famous ballet person?
I don't know that they said, did they?
Yeah, they gave the name. Oh, I didn't bring the book in here. That's what I forgot to do. It's at the beginning of chapter 8.
Moira Devereaux.
I'm going to Google it.
Google her. That's not a name I recognize, but.
Moira. Nope. I mean, there are definitely Moira Devereaux, and there is apparently one who is someone who has worked for or created fluid motion physiotherapy, but I don't think she's a famous dancer.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
If they had just been like, oh, and they were red because she danced this particular role.
Right.
And that's why they're lucky. And then that would have been the perfect time to just throw that in there. And they didn't. Maybe they just forgot. And they're like,
maybe.
They'll figure it out. They'll draw the conclusion. The shoes are red. Don't worry about it.
So Maggie has these famous ballet dancer's shoes and she brings them out before every performance and rubs them for good luck. And apparently people in the company or at the school know about them. And they're super valuable to Maggie. So Nancy gets her to agree to use those for the trap and actually spring it herself. So a few minutes later in rehearsal, we're sitting in the audience and Maggie loudly asks Sebastian if she can put the shoes in his piano seat for safekeeping. So now everyone knows where the shoes are. And then George goes to pull the fire alarm. So at first, Jameson will not let the dancers evacuate.
Oh, screw this guy. He's terrible.
I mean, seriously. But Bess kind of like pulls it together and gets really stern with him and is like, you have to let these dancers evacuate right now. We're going to get such a heavy fine if the fire department shows up and people are still in here and I'll make you pay it. Bess is awesome in this moment.
So this is the law. Come on.
Yeah. So they all evacuate. But Nancy hunkers down in the audience and waits because she knows that somebody is going to come try to take these shoes. Finally, she hears someone coming and then the piano bench open. So she springs up yelling, "Stop right there!" And it's Fiona with Maggie's shoes in her hand. But Fiona says she wasn't trying to steal Maggie's shoes. She was trying to retrieve these, and she reaches into the piano bench and pulls out a string of photos from, like, a photo booth of her and Colin. And in one of them, they are kissing.
Mm.
Okay. So Fiona is in a relationship with Colin and is trying to hide that for obvious reasons because Jameson doesn't allow dancers to date.
Right.
So Nancy asks if she's trying to sabotage Maggie to be able to dance in front of Oscar herself, you know, because of all the other stuff, all the other evidence that's against her. And Fiona seems, like, appalled at this suggestion. She says she did some things to sabotage Maggie, like steal her wig and set up the wake-up calls before because she wanted to dance some during the tour, but that's it. She definitely doesn't want to dance in front of Oscar because that would be way too intimidating, and she knows that she would flub it, basically. So interesting. But she does know that Colin, who she's in a secret relationship with, did destroy Maggie's dressing room. Okay. But she says, but it wasn't about Maggie. He just happened to be there and he snapped and got so angry about his dad and his dad not, like, approving of his choices to dance that he destroyed the dressing room. Yikes. I would say red flag, Fiona.
Yeah.
Break up with Colin. But okay. She says Colin is actually working on a letter of apology to Maggie right now about this and is going to offer to pay for everything to replace it. He's sorry. He just got super angry and out of control.
Yikes.
Yikes. Fiona says that's why she went out with Colin's dad to dinner the other night because she was trying to convince him to come see Colin dance because she's hoping to, like, repair their relationship to help Colin. Which is very nice, but it just seems like, I don't know what kind of success you're going to have with that, Fiona, but okay.
She tried.
Mm-hmm. But so, okay. At this point, the fire alarm stops. The rest of the dancers return to continue rehearsing, but, like, now what? Okay, so it seems like it's not Fiona, but there still has to be somebody else who's sabotaging Maggie other than Fiona. Because Fiona claims that she didn't install the app on Maggie's phone, or leave the note, or scratch up the posters. So, like, who did those things then?
Yeah.
So just as they're, like, working this out in the audience, trying to figure out what's going on, Jameson calls Nancy on stage to humiliate her for talking, and is about to make her dance by herself in front of everyone.
Oh my gosh.
At this point in the book, I, like, physically, like, cringed and, like, recoiled, like, no, like, Nancy, just leave, just run, because I cannot imagine anything more embarrassing
right.
than showing how much you can't dance in front of these incredibly talented
right
dancing.
Oh my gosh, Nancy. I know,
but Nancy. God bless Nancy. She's game. She's gearing up to get up there and do her best, you know? But just then, right as she's, like, positioning herself in the middle of the stage, one of the giant tree set pieces comes crashing down onto the stage, and Nancy has to, like, dive out of the way. Saved in the nick of time by a falling tree. Oh. Yikes.
Not entirely safe, though, because the tree does land on her foot. Mm-hmm. There's, like, an athletic trainer just in the building on site for the company, and she comes running over. Her name's Linda, and Nancy's like, oh my gosh, I've broken my foot. This is just what I needed. But Linda takes a look at it, and she's like, no, you got lucky. It's just really badly bruised, so stay off of it. You're going to need crutches, but you're okay, basically. So at this point, Jameson's just like, oh my gosh, okay, rehearsal over. We got to clean up this tree off the stage. It is just a disaster now. Maggie, of course, is distraught. She thinks that this is her fault that Nancy got injured. But Nancy's like, no, you go back to your hotel. You go get some rest tonight because you really need to be ready for the performance tomorrow. Jameson, unfortunately, has caught on to Nancy being an interloper, and that's actually why he had made a point to embarrass her, and he comes back to where Linda is kind of treating Nancy, and I think Bess and George have also come and joined her in the room now, and he's, like, super nasty to them. It's like, y'all have to get out. She tries to be like, no, I'm a detective. I'm, like, trying to investigate. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help your show, and he just does not believe that. He's like, you're trying to ruin things. Get out. I never want to see y'all again. Nancy, on crutches, sneaks back in anyway, of course.
Love Nancy.
She decides that she is going to examine the tree that fell. There's some crew members there trying to clean everything up and figure out what happened exactly, and they tell her that it was sabotaged. There was a wire holding the tree up, and it looks like it was cut probably days ago, though, and has just been slowly fraying ever since. And the fact that it fell at that exact moment just so happens. I mean, the company should have been rehearsing at that time anyway. So, I mean, how well can you really plan that if you're the one that cut the wire? But whatever. But this is a huge light bulb moment for Nancy. She realizes now, actually, nobody's sabotaging Maggie. Not Maggie specifically, at least. Because again, there's no way to know specifically when this tree would have fallen or who it would have landed on at the time. Mm-hmm. Someone is just trying to sabotage this show. And those notes that Maggie was getting of like, don't dance tomorrow, stay away, like all that stuff. It's not threats. They were warnings. Someone was trying to like destroy the show, but then spare Maggie and get her out of the way. So that when
this
the bad
the
stuff
twist.
Really happened, right? Amazing.
This is the best twist. Someone is trying to save Maggie. They're not trying to harm her. God, I love it. Love
it's
it.
Amazing. And so Nancy is like, ding, ding, ding. Jameson is the real target. You know, obviously he's been terrible to everyone this entire time. So who wouldn't have motive to maybe hurt him, but like also harm his career? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, he's really the only one aside from Maggie who has so much pressure on him with the Oscar Levine thing. Because if he doesn't impress Oscar, this is probably his last chance as a choreographer. A lot is riding on this for him. So, of course, if Maggie can't dance, the performance is going to be a disaster anyway. So everything is just kind of clicking together for Nancy. Obviously he has a lot of enemies because he's so awful. And in a last-ditch effort, they run to Jameson and are like, please delay the performance. Even just like a couple hours, like, we have time to figure this out. But like, somebody is coming for you, dude, and you need to let us figure this out. And he's like, no, I still don't believe you. I told y'all to get out. Doors are opening in 30 minutes, no matter what. I know. So at this point, they're like, well, we have to go home and change. Of course, we can't look like this for the performance. Like, I know there's a time crunch here, but we have to look nice. So
gotta have the right outfits.
Yes.
Detective Barbie, indeed.
God, I know. So Ned has actually already planned to, like, meet them for the performance, and he arrives. He's at the theater. They go back to the theater for the performance, and they meet up with Ned, and they start talking to him, you know, who could possibly be the culprit. This is when Nancy actually spots Miss Taylor, who has also arrived for the performance, their old ballet teacher, of course. She is basically embarrassing herself in front of Oscar Levine, and Nancy thinks, you know, what if she is jealous of Jameson's success? Maybe that was her motive, that she had wanted to be the choreographer. She'd wanted to be the choreographer for this show, and he got it instead. So, you know, maybe. So she goes up to Miss Taylor and is like, oh, I'm so glad you were our teacher when we were little instead of Jameson. He's horrible. And Miss Taylor goes off like agreeing, like, yeah, he doesn't deserve this honor, blah, blah, blah. He shouldn't get to have this performance for this great critic or whatever. You know, he's so terrible that dancer that he sent off to New York City Ballet Company, she had a nervous breakdown within 2 months of joining. Because of how horrible he was. Yeah. So Nancy's like, huh, that that means something. Like, that means something. What is it though? What is it? There's something to that. There's more there. But it's kind of too late to do anything now because they are seated in the audience and the lights dim. And she remembers, wait, Veronica is the only dancer of Jameson's that ever went on to make it big. What if it's Sebastian? What if he is getting revenge on behalf of his sister? And because he's so close with Maggie, that's why he's trying to get her right out of the way and spare her from all the drama. Oh my gosh. Ooh. Do you want to take the last chapter?
Okay, yeah. So
all these nice Ned moments.
I know, oh my God. Okay. Literally, it's like Ned takes center stage in the last chapter. And right. I was literally sweating. Like, we'll just have to talk about it. So they decide, okay, if it's Sebastian, we need to go check out his dress room to see if we can figure out if he has something planned for this performance, right?
Why does everyone have individual dressing rooms, including
the companies? I don't know. That makes no sense, especially not, the piano company.
Wouldn't he just arrive in what he's going to wear for the show? It's not like he has to change into a tutu and tights and, like, oh my god.
Or it's not like there's no way that every individual dancer in this school has an individual dressing room. There has to be a place where everybody is getting dressed. And
usually there's like one or two just big rooms and that's it. Even the star has to share. Yes. Like, that's fine.
So, and it's also not like there's nowhere for him to change if he really needs, whatever. Anyway, he apparently has a dressing room, so they go there. And Beth says that they can get to it from a stage door around the back. So, but remember, Nancy is on crutches here, and so they would have to go outside, and the snow is really deep, whatever. So Ned does the hottest thing Ned has ever done to date, but it gets better. sweeps Nancy up into his arms, and what he says is, forgive the indignity, but this is going to be a lot faster than you hobbling through the snow. Safer, too.
I'm dying. Ned, don't do this to us.
Not only is he exhibiting his strength and being able to carry Nancy, he also exhibits his sensitivity to her feelings about potentially feeling insecure about having to be carried and his desire for her ultimate safety and his ability to ensure it. I'm just saying.
And it still gets better.
It does. It gets better. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I'm getting hot and bothered just thinking about it right now.
This is good.
Okay. So they make it to Sebastian's dressing room, and of course, it's locked. We should insert
a clip.
It's locked. George picks it because, get this, apparently she's better at picking locks than Nancy is.
All right, George.
Love that. So they get into the dressing room and they don't find a whole bunch except what seems to be a bunch of talcum powder. But Ned, because apparently he has chemistry chops still, which I love this throwback to the original mystery series where Ned was studying chemistry in school. He identifies this as actually being, hold on one second, let me make sure I get this right, orthochlorobenzyl malonate, it's right there that I get tripped up.
Malonanitrile.
Orthochlorobenzyl malonanitrile.
Should we spell it out?
No. But that is definitely the longest word in a Nancy Drew book ever. That has to hold the record.
Oh, yeah.
Has to. Easily. That's longer than supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, right?
How many characters is this? I don't think it's longer than that, but it's close. How do we count manually? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 30.
Okay. So supercalifragilisticexpialidocious is supercalifragilisticexpialidocious LIDOCIOUS. So that's 35? Something like that.
Sounds right. Amazing.
Ooh.
So just 5 letters shorter then.
Yeah.
That's pretty long word. Yeah.
And he says that this chemical, which I am not going to attempt to say again, is a chemical that can be used to make tear gas if you get it hot enough. Oh!
What?
So Ned is very smart as well.
Yeah.
And he knows how to make tear gas, which will serve us well in the upcoming riots and apocalypse. And then George brings up, hey, because she knew this when she was working backstage, you could use the Fresnels, which are these stage lights, to get that chemical hot enough to be able to cause tear gas. So they're like, oh my God, Sebastian is going to tear gas everyone on stage using these stage lights. So they rush over to the light booth with Nancy and Ned's arms again. Jameson is in there watching the performance, and he doesn't buy their story about, you know, this proposed sabotage situation, even though they show him the bottles of the chemical, and he refuses to cut the lights. But at this point, some of his dancers on stage start sneezing and coughing.
Is this worse than the fire alarm thing? Like not letting them leave?
This is so much worse.
Yeah.
Because should be able to see the stage, see your dancers reacting, and be like, that's not normal. You know, let's cut these lights like you suggested. But
no, show must go on. These girls need to get poisoned.
He does.
Like,
yeah. And so some of his dancers are starting to get tear gassed.
He's the real villain in this.
Seriously. Deserves what he gets.
Yeah.
But luckily, one of the lighting crew is not as heartless as Jameson, and he does cut the Fresnels, despite Jameson's outrage at it or whatever. Which, I just have to say, I'm curious about this, too, because if they're a touring company, touring this show, then the places they're going have their own, like, crew that work at the theater. You know right. what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like... Or, I mean, they might have some of their own crew, but there's always going to be someone, there to work that light board that is not, like, that
right.
that light board is the property of that theater, and they're going to have their own person working the light board. So it makes sense that he's like, nah, bitch, I'm cutting these lights. You know what I mean?
I don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm. So he then sends a tech to remove the powder from these lights before he turns them back on. So some of the, you know, some of the show in that moment is being performed in darkness, which kind of sucks, but the entire stage, or not the entire stage, so some of it's still lit. So it's not, you know, the end of the world. They don't have to stop the show.
Yeah.
But so Nancy, Bess, and George and Ned head backstage to tell Maggie, hey, mystery is solved, so that she'll know that she is safe for her upcoming solo. But when they get backstage, they can't find her. And someone says that they saw her go into Sebastian's dressing room. Uh-oh. So they race over, but his door is locked. Inside, they can hear Maggie crying inside and, like, asking Sebastian, why is he doing this? And then Ned, he says, my turn. And he kicks the door down.
Ned!
Oh, my God.
I never thought we'd see the day.
Oh my God.
Yes, Ned, it is your turn. Your time to shine.
Just the protectiveness, I think. The protectiveness and the power. Like, that's true. That is the opposite of whatever toxic masculinity is. That is positive masculinity, man. Holy shit.
Frank Hardy who?
I know! My God!
What's happening?
Frank Hardy would never... Frank Hardy would, like, crawl through the vents to get... Ned kicks the fucking door down! Sorry. Excuse me. So excited. Oh, my God. Okay, so he kicks the door down. And inside, Maggie is tied to a chair with Sebastian telling her that this is the only way that he can save her from Jameson. And he's kind of, like, manic, right? Mm-hmm. Nancy tries to, like, calm him down, tell him this is not helping Maggie. He says Jameson has to pay for what he's done. And Maggie's obviously very confused about, you know, what he's saying. You know, what has he done? And then Sebastian finally comes out and tells her that the real reason why Veronica won't return her calls, and that's because she's in an institution and not allowed access to her cell phone. Mm-hmm. Because after she joined the dance company, she was so, like, distraught and upset from all of the pressure of dancing professionally, and saying that all of the comments that Jameson ever made to her were, like, running through her head, and she had a nervous breakdown. And so Sebastian didn't want Jameson to be able to destroy Maggie the way he destroyed Veronica.
This wrong is way to go about this, dude. It's terrible. It's terrible. But not the solution.
But, like, to see that happen to, like, your older sister, to someone that, like, you really looked up to and you, like, were super close with.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. But, yeah, so Nancy at this point notices that Ned is, like, moving closer to Sebastian. So she understands what he's trying to do. Oh, my God, Ned. So she tries to keep Sebastian talking and distract him so that Ned can tackle him.
Ned Nickerson.
Which they successfully do and pull off. Ned tackles him to the floor, and Sebastian doesn't fight. So they untie Maggie, and she goes on to complete her solo beautifully, just in the nick of time. And Ned and Nancy wait with Sebastian until the police come and take him away. And then Maggie is congratulated after the performance by Oscar, and here we get all of our wrap-up. Bess announces that she has signed up for tap dancing.
Aww.
Because throughout this experience, she realized how much she missed dancing. And she also says it's okay to do things not to be the best, but because you enjoy them. And then if tap dancing turns out to not be my thing, then I'll just keep trying things until I find it. Like, until I find what I want. Isn't that spectacular?
Yes.
What an amazing message.
Everyone has such good moments in this book.
This is wonderful.
Thank you, Beth.
And then, even at the end, Nancy makes this really sweet comment about how much that, yes, she enjoys solving mysteries, but she loves being around her friends even more.
No.
And when I tell you, I cried at the end of this Nancy Drew book. It was like, this is the sweetest, best ending to a Nancy Drew book I have ever read.
Right? Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
So satisfying. What a roller coaster ride of emotion.
The plot especially twist,
in this last chapter.
I know. The like, supposedly the victim actually really being the villain of the story. And then, all this heartbreak in the process.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
That's so and the good. Villain being the victim.
Right.
You know?
Right?
Wow. In multiple ways, because you have Sebastian and you have Jameson. Jameson, who is a villain and a victim. Sebastian, who is a victim and a villain.
Right.
That's crazy.
That's pretty poetic.
Yeah. And how victimhood can turn you into a villain. And how villainhood can turn you into a victim.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Chef's kiss.
Yes.
So good.
Oh, man. Well, where
oh my
do
God,
we want to start?
Nickerson.
I know. Okay, so Ned. Ned is a great place to start.
I am eating my words. I think issue before was that I'm like clutching my clothes. I think my issue before was that I could never see I couldn't envision a satisfying relationship dynamic between Ned and Nancy. But this book
It just makes it so simple. Like, it's just, it's yes. good. And that's, it's just a good relationship. It's solid. It's supportive. It's great.
Because Ned is finally being a good guy. Yeah. I think that's what was missing in so many other things, is that Ned was never a good guy. Yeah. And I think of that was that, but previously, I think previously in, you know, so many past years, our conceptualization of what is a good guy has changed so much, right? With our awareness of, like, you know, I kind of already talked about, like, toxic masculinity, like, with our awareness of that, so obvious in some of the characterizations of Ned, what was, like, just gross behavior that but previously we may have not seen as being gross.
Right.
So it does make a whole lot of sense that in this book written in 2015, we're finally getting a Ned that we see as attractive because we're closer to where we are in the world now, right. You know?
Yeah.
But thank God. I mean, God. There's nothing like having a satisfying, like, male romantic lead in, you know, a book or movie or something. You know? My God.
Oh, Ned. Finally getting some points.
Yeah, I can see, because I can see it now. I can see the good of their relationship.
Yeah.
And that is when Ned is, can actually be a heroic figure, be his heroic self.
Right.
You know? And not because Nancy is stopping him previously, but because he wasn't secure in himself, where he is now.
Right.
And sensitive, so sensitive to Nancy being like, I understand that, you know, I'm sorry for the indignity, but I want to keep you safe and this will be faster, which I know you'll appreciate. Just Ned.
Nancy and Ned. Finally. I know. Finally a good couple.
I have to read some of the files stat.
I know.
So that I can get back to being on Frank Hardy, because I much prefer that. But
that'll cure you real quick. Just a single file. You'll be back. You'll be good.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Carolyn Keene, whoever you are this time. Thank you.
Seriously. You know what you're doing, man.
All the characters just had such a good little arc in this. Not even an arc.
Sweet Bess.
Yeah.
Sweet Bess.
I mean, I don't know that they even really do the whole, like, moral of the story at the end and we're going to learn something. And this, we do. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's okay to, like, not have a thing or feel like you're good at a particular thing, but just as long as you're enjoying it, that's what matters.
Yeah, do things you enjoy.
It was a wonderful way to highlight it.
Mm-hmm. It was also just so, it was just... just inarguably, I think, like, such a, like, good book, like, thematically, like, structurally, like, you can tell that the author really knew what they were doing with centering all of this around, like, ballet in particular. It's like, oh, this is a great opportunity to be able to talk about X, Y, and Z, you know, gender roles. Masculinity, femininity, skill, you know, and like how that translates in different people and, you know, people's insecurity about, you know, skill and like physical ability. Nancy even experiences that, you know, and shame and like all just, it was just so, such a well thought out book that I'm just like,
oh yeah,
just excellent. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of the gender roles thing with George and, like, the whole Colin thing with his dad, there was one particular part that I thought was a really good highlight of it. So I guess I'll just read it here. I've found it. So this is right after we witness Colin and Michael, his dad, arguing outside about, like, I don't want you to dance in the show, blah, blah, blah. And Nancy says, what's up? I asked George, noting that she looked particularly glum. It's nothing, George says. That fight just reminded me of the fight that I had with my mom when I told her I didn't want to join the ballet with you or Bess, or with you and Bess. I wanted to join the robotics club instead, and she was upset that I didn't want to do the same things that most girls wanted to do. best rub George's back. I know it's upsetting, and I'm not saying your mom or Colin's dad handled the situation well, but their intentions were good. They just want to prevent their kids from getting teased. George shrugs. I think it's a parent's job to let their kids be who they are and to support them no matter what. I mean, that's pretty much the end of the passage. They move on from that. But, like, thank you, George. Thank you, George, for speaking up for not only yourself, but also just in general. Colin here and the expectations that parents place on their children for this kind of stuff. Yeah.
And I will say, too, the Bess seem to have some weird takes in this book. Sometimes, and that's definitely one of them. But then there was also another one that was about Jameson, where so on
is it when she's like, oh, he's just trying to like pressure them to work harder.
He's saying that like she that even because after they talk about like how Jameson had made that specific comment about even if you're like suffering like threats and like harassment or whatever, you have to like work through it. And they theorize, well, maybe Jameson's behind it and as a way to like try to, you know, train Maggie to perform under pressure or something. And Bess says, well, if it is Jameson, we don't have to worry because he's doing it for Maggie's own good.
No.
Which is a bad take.
Yeah. No, he's just verbally abusing these girls.
Right. But I also think, too, that even though Bess has those bad takes, I think on a certain level, I mean, they didn't really highlight this too much, but we can read into it as Bess is struggling right now because of her insecurity about not having a skill, right? So she sees people trying to give people that skill, right? With Jameson, you know, trying to help, quote unquote, Maggie. Yeah. So she sees that as being a positive thing because it gives Maggie something that Bess feels like she doesn't have. And she sees, you know, George's mom as encouraging, you know, George to do this thing to get a skill that she thinks that she should have because, again, Bess feels insecure about not having a particular skill, right? So you could understand that. It's still bad takes, and I wish I had explored that a little bit more because I think that would have been excellent, but maybe that's a little too deep for a kid's book. I don't know. But
we didn't need the devil's advocate on Jameson's behalf. He was pretty terrible. So
yeah. Which, let's talk about Jameson.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So physically abusive, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Putting his hands on his dancers.
Yeah.
In, like, threatening ways. And Nancy makes a point to, like, narrate, the, like, when he, like, grabs Maggie by the neck, that he's doing it, like, gently. But I'm sorry. There is no scenario where that's acceptable. Yeah. Right?
Especially someone who's, like, there's a dynamic there of authority and power. And he, like, this is a teenage girl. That's not. We don't. So, I mean, we don't know how old she is, I don't think. But she's if she's not a minor, she's probably not much older than 18. So,
yeah, I think they position her as being like right about to like graduate and leave from this dance academy.
Right.
So she's probably
still be a minor.
17, 18. Right. Yeah.
It's especially inappropriate to do that when the people that you're doing it to are children. So that's even worse. Awesome.
So physically abusive, definitely verbally abusive because he shouts so many awful things at these dancers about being horrible or whatever. And we know that because of like, you know, the Veronica issue and emotionally abusive because he like tries to control their lives by not allowing them to date. I think at some point he makes a crack about food and like eating.
That
like,
is a huge problem within the ballet industry of like your dance teacher will tell you what you are and are not allowed to eat. Which, like, why do you have so much control over their entire lives? That's ridiculous. Right. They're already spending what seems like their entire time with this company, traveling with them, working with them, dancing. It's too much. It's too much.
So part of me is like, Jameson should be arrested. I mean, I know that, like, a lot of that stuff is difficult to prove. But when it comes to, like, he physically put his hands on that girl. You know what I mean? That's people saw that.
Yeah.
Everyone was aware of that.
People would
and it just seems like
attest to it, I'm sure.
Right. And these are children. So, like, I understand that, like, the culture of, like, dance is different and much more intense, but it still seems like you could bring child abuse charges against this guy.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
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 Especially because we know the school is also a part of this performance, so we have, like, literal little baby children, like, tiny little dancers, not 18-ish years old. Yeah.
Ugh. Right. Not necessarily people who could speak for themselves.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. Okay.
Horrid. But luckily, in the book, we explain that Jameson is horrible and all the reasons why he is horrible, so...
They're not trying to pass him off as, like...
Right. Oh. They're not trying to say that this is normal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They even highlight at the end when she's talking to Miss Taylor about how horrible Jameson is to his dancers. So, okay.
Sure.
But fair enough. He also makes a crack about, calling Nancy, like, deaf. Like, are you deaf?
Like, oh, my gosh.
Do you not hear me yelling for you?
Something
about, like, I would know if I had a deaf dancer in my company.
Dude.
Yikes.
Uncalled for.
Right. Also, like, deaf people can't dance? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Uncalled for to assume that. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like, why would you?
Yeah.
Why would it? What? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay.
Yeah. It was gross. So he's an awful person. Okay, let's see.
I think that's all my notes. It was just best George Ned and Jameson is crazy.
Oh, I wrote something about how we have to talk about Ned and Nancy, what she says about him on page 65. Will you look at page 65?
Yeah, hopefully our page numbers are the same.
I think I have the same version of your book in this one.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Because it's 11. So I.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, she said something sweet.
Oh, okay. So this is when they are talking about how Jameson doesn't allow them to date. And Maggie shrugs, relationships are a distraction, and if you want to be a professional dancer, you can't afford any distractions. Nancy goes, I wasn't sure I agreed with that. Ned had helped me solve many mysteries. Sometimes if I was at a dead end and convinced that I wouldn't be able to solve it, Ned gave me the confidence to keep going. He never asked me to choose between him and sleuthing, maybe in this universe, and I never considered him a distraction. If anything, he was an asset to helping me achieve my dreams.
Isn't that amazing?
Nancy!
Oh, what a lovely perspective on their relationship.
Right? Aw. Aw,
Nancy. And clearly Ned feels the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Because how quickly he jumps to help Nancy and others.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think that's all I have too. I will say, they also mentioned Twitter.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Did I say that before?
I don't remember. We did mention TikTok, but they did.
Yeah.
I think in the first chapter they mentioned that. That's kind of funny. So
yeah. I was excited when I read that. It was like first right off the bat, like page 2 or something. It was like, George is obsessed with Twitter. And I was like, ah!
That seems on brand. That seems...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Oh, George. Maybe George invented TikTok in this universe because she found this app. And was like,
it's
you know what? Maybe if we
created
something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
App millionaire. Billionaire, probably. Too funny.
I could see it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I feel like this is going to be the easiest flashlight score ever.
Yes. Absolutely. I give it 5 flashlights.
Yeah. 5.
5 flashlights. Not a flaw.
No.
Not a single flaw aside from the title, which I think they literally could have solved with just putting like one more extra sentence in the book.
It's excusable.
But
I'll let it slide. Yeah. 5 easily. Yep.
I'll allow it.
Oh, so good.
Lovely.
So you said you did have the same cover for this one? We didn't really talk about
the cover. Yeah, Nancy in front of the mirrors. Yeah.
Or is it very simple? I think it's supposed to be Nancy. We do have a pair of red slippers and a pair of pink slippers on the cover. So, but yeah, this one's very simple. It's just Nancy standing in front of some mirrors in a ballet bar. And she's like looking off shiftily like, oh, who's sneaking up on me or something. And also the moon is visible. I don't know if we're inside or outside. Huh. If we're like looking through a window. I don't know. Whatever.
Interesting. Yeah, I wish the cover was maybe a little bit more descriptive. Or like more representational of something that happened in the book, you know?
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, because I feel like most of their rehearsals would be on stage, not in front of mirrors like this.
A bar. Yeah. Yeah, see, I mean, I think I would wish for maybe like the show poster or something.
That would be good.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool with like a scratched out dancer on it.
Wouldn't
that be interesting?
That would have been nice, yeah. We can pretend.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyway. Okay. All right. Love it. Next up for episode 45, which is a little bit of a special episode, we are going to be watching. Corey, do you want to say it?
Yes, we're going to watch. It's the 2002, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 2002 TV movie. It's just called Nancy Drew, right? Starring Maggie Lawson.
Oh, let me check, actually. I'm pretty sure.
I think the title is just Nancy Drew. But we're going to watch the 2002 movie starring Maggie Lawson as Nancy.
Yeah, it's just Nancy Drew. Yeah.
So, very exciting. Been a minute since we've done a movie.
Yeah, it has been a minute. Historically, this has been my favorite Nancy Drew movie.
Really?
The Maggie Lawson 2002. Yes.
I love Maggie Lawson.
It's because Maggie Lawson is so excellent.
Yeah.
And also, I love an adult Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the other Nancy Drew movies that we've gotten, Nancy Drew is definitely younger. Even the Nancy Drew movies from the 30s or whatever were, she was 16.
Well, that tracks for the time period.
Right.
I think Emma.
But I'm saying, like,
Emma Roberts
this is the
is
only
younger as well, and Sophia Lillis's character is definitely younger.
She's in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So this is the only like fully adult Nancy Drew representation we have in a movie. I'm not talking about the TV show. So you know,
because she's in college.
Love
she
it.
Like just started
she's
college
in
this show, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Or in
yes.
the movie. Yeah. But,
yes.
Oh, so good.
I'm very excited. Very, very excited for that. Okay.
So y'all join us then. Go watch the movie in the meantime. Definitely read Red Slippers in the meantime.
We also may have a special episode pop up soon. You know, it's October. Who knows what could happen? So just keep your eyes peeled. You never know what spooky thing might be around the corner. Alrighty, y'all. See ya.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there,
thanks for listening.